Hello, welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Amanda Hayes. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Anna. Hello, everyone.
And this week we've been reading The Marriage Portrait by Maggie O'Farrell. But first, book news, and there's been another award. So the National Book Award for Fiction has been won by Rabbit Hutch by Tess Gunty. So I had heard of this. I have not read it. Have you read it?
No.
It has been getting a lot of buzz this year, and I think it had been noted on other lists, and now I can't remember which ones, but it's a debut novel, and I think it's been described as the talked about debut novel of 2022.
Right.
Yeah, so it's set in Indiana. I think Tess Gunty is in Indiana. She's an American novelist based in Indiana. Set in a housing community or housing estate, I believe. And I can't say much more about it, but does it intrigue you?
I just quickly read an outline then as we were getting ready, and it does sound very interesting that they live in this. It's the housing estate's called the Rabbit Hutch, which is quite evocative. And all the inhabitants, it sort of shows how they interact, and something happens and they go back and look at how they were all involved and what they knew about this incident. So it looks like it could be really interesting.
I think I will read it just because everyone's talking about this author, and I think it obviously sounds like she's one to watch.
Mm.
I'm interested because of all the hype, basically.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And that can go two ways sometimes, can't it?
It can.
But anyway, we have to make our own minds up.
So I will report back on that one, Amanda.
Thank you, Anna.
Yes, on to our book of the week, The Marriage Portrait by Maggie O'Farrell.
Okay, Maggie O'Farrell, someone I love. So The Marriage Portrait is her ninth work of fiction. She's also written some non-fiction and some children's books. She's been highly awarded, and notably for Hamnet, which I think was 2020, she won the Women's Prize for Fiction and she won the Fiction Prize at the National Book Critics Circle Awards, which means she was recognised in both the US and the UK. Her books have been translated into more than 30 languages. Anna, you and Annie discussed Hamnet on the podcast previously, didn't you?
And Annie absolutely loved it, and I found it a bit too sad.
Yeah, it was very sad. I loved Hamnet too. And so it's really interesting after reading such a great book like Hamnet and following on from that, your expectations are quite high. Mm. So I went into this with high expectations. So the book is based on the short life of Lucrezia de' Medici, who was alive in 16th century Renaissance Florence, and she may or may not have been murdered or poisoned, probably, by her husband, Alfonso II, the Duke of Ferrara. So O'Farrell got the idea for the book when she saw a portrait of Lucrezia and after reading a poem by Robert Browning called My Last Duchess, in which there's an allusion to her. So what happens in the book, Lucrezia grows up in a palazzo in Florence. She's part of the Medici family. Her older sister is due to be married to the Duke of Ferrara, but unfortunately the sister dies, and so Lucrezia is substituted in. And marriages between noble families those days were very strategic. They were about fortifying the family's position. So when this occurs, she's only a child, so some of her attendants manage to collude a little bit and delay the marriage for a couple of years. So in the novel, at the age of 15, she's married to the Duke and she moves with him to his court in the north of Italy in Ferrara. So she's in an entirely new place. She's very alone and there's a lot of pressure on her to produce a male heir. And a year into the marriage, her husband takes her to one of his palaces called the Fortezza, and she realises that he intends to kill her. And that's not a plot spoiler because that is in the very first paragraph of the book. Mm. And then the book goes on, it alternates between that and the hours following that realisation by her, and then it also fills in her backstory. So there were a lot of things I really liked about the book, but I'm just going to say one thing and then I'll ask Anna what she thought. I felt like in this book the only character that was really developed was Lucrezia, and I didn't gain a lot of insight into the other characters. So when I was reading it, I sometimes felt a bit adrift. And because she lived a very sheltered life, as was the lot of young women back in those days, which we can talk about, I mean, not a lot happens. And therefore, there's not a lot to write about when you're basically in a room for most of your life.
But it's a long book.
It's a long book. So coming off Hamnet, I struggled a bit with this. I like the way she writes, but I think the story wasn't quite compelling enough. So what did you think, Anna?
I thought the same.
No, we always agree. Well,
I feel like we keep agreeing. Yeah. But I'm interested. I haven't read a lot of reviews, so I'm interested in what the consensus was. But maybe that in itself is part, you know, I think when a book really hits in the way Hamnet did, you see a lot more reviews.
Yeah, true.
You read a lot more about it just inadvertently. So maybe that says something. I felt the same way, I think. I love Maggie O'Farrell's writing, her ability to sort of set a scene, the warmth that she has, you know, her tone is really warm and in sort of welcoming and inviting, and, you know, she's bringing you with her and just crafting these beautiful, very visual, beautiful pictures and scenes that you can really you can imagine how sumptuous and how rich the setup is in this palace, and you'd sort of see it with costumes, and if there's food, then you can see the juice dripping, or you can smell the aromas of the cooking, because she's sort of so rich with her prose, and she captures really well those nuanced moments between characters. So it might be Lucrezia's standing there and there's an artist who's come to do a painting, and it might be just a glance that passes between them because she's not meant to be speaking to him, or because her husband's in the room, and it's the smallest little nuanced things, or the way that her husband will look at her, and then he might break the tension by saying something nice. But all of those movements within a day or an hour that can happen in those sort of dynamics between people, she's so astute with the way she observes that. So that all of that is there, but of course it has to hang off a story. And like you, I felt that it really lacked a strong story, which sounds funny when you think it's so dramatic that a 16-year-old girl could possibly be murdered by her husband. It sounds like a very dramatic premise. But for me, because it starts off, I mean, there's even a historical note at the start, even before you get to that first scene where she suspects she's been poisoned, there's a historical note that she died, and it's thought but not known that perhaps her husband killed her because she hadn't produced an heir. And so that for me took away a lot of the suspense, because you sort of know, and you know that she definitely died at age 16. So you then read it's 400 or so pages, I believe. So you're reading a lot just to get to where you already knew she got to, and that took away a lot of the tension for me. So you sort of know that she'll marry him. You know that she'll end up in this situation. And so so why are we then reading all the history of how she was a little girl and running around the palace, and her father bought a tiger, and I wasn't interested in the tiger because it just isn't relevant. I mean, it was a metaphor for a beautiful but trapped, you know, wild animal, I suppose. But it just didn't particularly feel... it didn't add to any tension for me. And also, even apart from that overarching lack of suspense, even the small moments, like the Duke or her husband treats her at times quite badly, or the way he speaks to her, and that didn't surprise... it wasn't surprising because we know that he's the suspect if there's been a murder, and just his method of ruling his dukedom or whatever his region was quite harsh. And I mean, even one of the characters says in the book, you don't get to be as powerful as him without being quite hard-nosed. Maybe it's what you were saying, Amanda, that the some of the other characters aren't fully developed, but he's sort of a hard man who you, nowadays we'd describe as a coercive, controlling husband.
Yeah, definitely.
Of the worst sort. Even that lacked tension or...
Although I also think, Anna, what one thing that did interest me about the book was the way that women were treated in those days. The fact that she couldn't go for a walk without an escort was, I think, her life in general. I don't think that was specific to her husband. I mean, it would have been the same for her back in Florence. She never left the palazzo. Like, women were so constrained.
But I think she had more freedom in her family palazzo. But that's also, I suppose, she's trying to be authentic to who she thinks that character was. But the other thing I found, so it's interesting, Amanda, you said one of the problems is that her life wasn't that interesting because she was locked up inside half the time, most of the time.
Yeah.
And that reminded me of the book by Pat Barker, The Silence of the Girls, which is a retelling of Troy from, I want to say, Briseis. I've forgotten her name exactly, but the slaves, women's point of view, and in particular the slave who I think Achilles took, the woman Achilles took as his slave. And you sort of love the idea that, oh, we're going to have a women-centered story set in the Trojan War. But unfortunately for me, and I'm in the minority on that book, a lot of people loved it, but unfortunately for me, the women who were taken as slaves, you know, were contained to their tents or their, you know, their area and weren't out fighting the war or doing much. They were doing the washing or something. And so it really did for me fall flat, because every time Achilles entered the story, something exciting was happening, and I kind of wanted to know what's Achilles up to. And it's terrible because you want the woman to be the hero, but when you're trying to retrofit a heroine, you know, a heroic woman into a story that was dominated by men, it's hard to give them a lot of action.
Yeah.
And so I felt this suffered from the same
very thing. Much so.
Yeah. So that was interesting. And the other thing, which is a very much something probably idiosyncratic to me, was that Maggie O'Farrell's an English author with an English sensibility, and it felt quite English to me. I didn't feel as if I was in Italy. So even though, let's face it, if it was written by an Italian author, I would have to read it in translation. Yeah. I've noticed books by Eleanor Ferrante, for example, translated by Anne Goldstein, even though I'm reading it in English, it feels so Italian. The gestures, the words, the way of speaking, the way of interacting, I feel like I'm in Napoli, you know, when I read those books, or Milan or Rome. Whereas this, I felt like we could have been in an English estate.
Yeah, that's a very good point,
so
Anna.
So I didn't, you know, I'm intrigued by the Medici family, but I didn't feel like this really took me there in the way that was exciting. So I'd love to read, Italian author's
take on
the Medicis, for example.
Yeah.
And if there is one, let me know. Whereas I thought what she did so beautifully in Hamnet was it was a matching of the right author for the right story, because that English countryside is just, it was singing under Maggie O'Farrell's with her writing.
And there were more characters who you identified with and empathised with, and there was more tension. And despite the fact she writes so beautifully, and for me that was a reason to keep reading the book. It just fell a bit flat, I think.
I thought it picked up a bit once she got to the palace, but it takes about half the book to get there. But then when the artists came, so there were scenes where, and I suppose that's the only action that she, they're the only people she really gets to speak to. So the scenes where she's speaking to the artists or speaking to his consigliere, I've forgotten his name, but his advisor, they had moments of small moments of tension, and they were probably the scenes that seemed to matter, I suppose.
Yeah.
But half the book wasn't that. It was sort of the lead up to that. Yeah. So that, but as you say, whereas Hamnet was much more cohesive.
Yeah. I think overall I definitely enjoyed the book, and I would recommend it for fans of Maggie O'Farrell who love the way she writes. You will hopefully enjoy this book as I did. But as a counterpoint or in comparison to Hamnet, it's just not quite there.
I agree. Yes. Well, that was The Marriage Portrait by Maggie O'Farrell. And coming up, I don't know what's next, but soon we will, would believe it or not, we will be doing our books of the year. I can't believe it. I'm still in denial that it's the close to the end of the year. So stay tuned for that. Let us know what your favourite books of the year have been. And you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go. We are on email at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Litzy, and Twitter at A. Bailey Karras. And Amanda?
I am on Instagram at @vibrant_lives_podcast and Facebook at Vibrant Lives Podcast.
Fabulous. We'll see you next week. Bye for now.